Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Happy Thursday. Well, I think a lot of questions are out there in the world of real estate. For one thing, because things have changed so much. And one of the things that I've mentioned on the show, and I truly believe is true, most of our real estate people have become very specialized. They've branched out to be almost like the world of doctors, where you have a heart doctor and you have a lung doctor and you have a eyes, ears, nose, and throat doctor. Now, in the world of real estate and finance, there are mortgage specialists, there are agents, there are people who are simply ready, willing, and able to find a house for you and sell it. In most cases, that would be an agent. But then there are also people who have learned the banking industry so that they can, in many cases, something that looks like it's going to be too difficult to process, you go to some of them and they have ways of figuring out problem management for something that isn't a run-of-the-mill. There's also lots of different organizations that are purely and simply channels into which you can travel to get what you need in the world of purchasing a new home. So a couple weeks ago, we had a friend of mine on the show, and he talked a little bit about mortgages, short sales, reverse mortgages, things like that. I have invited another young man to join us today, and he's a little bit more specialized in the things that he does. And if you're out there and you're in the middle of buying or selling, or confused about what all the local media tells us is going on in the world of home buying, I suggest you call in at 347-989-0352 and take the opportunity to ask some questions in regard to this. It is confusing, and if you're not really up on the world of finance, which a lot of us aren't, we know how to keep our bank account, we know how to pay our bills, but the world of finance is very intricate. And there are all kinds of loopholes, and there are all kinds of ways of making things happen. So let's invite Shelley in first. Good morning, Shel. We have Lloyd with us this morning that's going to talk about mortgages, et cetera.
Oh, very good, very good. Well, good morning, Renee. Good morning, Lloyd. And I'm looking forward to this show. I think I like the fact that we're covering real estate because, like you said, it is such a major issue for so many people today. Even myself, personally, I'm going through some issues with my own home.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there's a lot of people out there, and there's a lot of stuff that comes on television that leads you to believe, you know, that everything is doable and it's not a problem. And they're all different kinds of salespeople. And that's okay, because that's somebody's job. But it is misleading. Good morning, Lloyd.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
Good, good. A little bit early
that's
for me.
Good. Well, you know, it's funny because now the time change, I come in my office in the morning, and before this time change, when I got in here at 7 o'clock, it was light out. Now it's still dark. I have all kinds of lights on, and I'm like, gosh, it feels like I'm doing the show late at night.
Yeah, it does feel weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shelley, Lloyd Shelley has been a friend of mine for many, many years. We worked together at the Institute, and we continue to do joint ventures together. Mm-hmm. And Shelley Lloyd, I met through John, and I met his family. He has the most adorable, delicious little girl you ever saw in your whole life.
Aww.
And, yeah, she's just as cute as a button. She came around the back of my desk, and she talks and told me she has to have a puppy. So Mommy and Daddy, very shortly after that, went out and got her a puppy.
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to let you ladies know I also have my partner on the line. His name is James Wolfetti. He's a short sale specialist.
Oh, good.
James,
hi,
hi,
James.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning,
hi, good
James.
Morning. How are you? Good morning.
Yeah, this is, as I said, everything that comes across the giant screen in everybody's living room has a tendency mm-hmm. to get us all, I don't know, sometimes enlightens us to something being available, but seldom gives us the real information, if you know what I mean. I don't think it's intentional.
Yeah.
It's just hard
mm-hmm.
to do something in 60 seconds that's pretty, you know, that's pretty intricate. So
yeah.
I think a lot of people are confused. And when John was on, I said, you know, the term short sale sounds like it's going to be fast and easy, and it isn't.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, and reverse mortgage, if you analyze that title, that's pretty confusing too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think it's difficult. Plus that there are other terminologies that I think a lot of people I know would like to understand a little better, even though I think a lot of us use this terminology, we're not really clear on the intricacies of all of them. Besides
mm-hmm.
the short sale and the reverse mortgage, there's a balloon mortgage, there's underwriters, there's all different kinds of things that can happen in you guys' world that the rest of us are totally in the dark about. Shell, would you like to ask the guys something, or shall we just go with some generalization in the beginning?
Right now, let's go with some generalization. I think I'm actually in the midst of trying to short sale my house or get a standard buyer. I'm having difficulties having my mortgage company accept the offer from the short sale. Although I think I've done a good job of basically verifying that the offer they're giving is a good one. So now we're trying to find some standard buyers. So I think my situation may be a little bit more unique than a lot of people that do try to go through a short sale. So we'll just listen to some information, and I think that would probably apply to more people than my particular situation.
Mm-hmm. So let's go with short sale first. Let's explain that again. John did explain that. We talked about that at length, but we probably have some other listeners today because I kind of advertised the fact that we were going to talk about this. So let's discuss a short sale first, the steps, the outcome, that kind of thing.
All right, James, that's all you, brother. All right.
Pretty much a short sale is if you purchased your home, most homeowners between 2004, 2005, and 2006, I saw a few of them even in 07, that purchased at a higher amount, had a larger loan than what the market would hold, and mm-hmm. since 2007 on, people have been selling in, you know, the familiar term, short sale. It pretty much is the bank as the loan originator is taking a loss. So, for example, if you purchased a home for $400,000 and you happen to take out one of those excellent 100% financing deals and now your home is worth $300,000, you're in a short for $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to sell, it was until December 31st, 2013, when you went to sell, if it was your primary residence, you were able to walk away from that deficiency, and you wouldn't incur any type of tax or liability to it. Unfortunately, they have not extended that bailout. It was called the Mortgage Debt Forgiveness Act. Unfortunately, that has not been extended. So if you are trying to short sale in 2014, it is going to be a bit tougher than if you would have been able to close last year, December 31st.
So does that mean that somebody can no longer make their mortgage payment? I have a friend who just lost her husband. They were in the middle of either doing a bankruptcy or remortgaging or whatever. They were working very closely with the bank. Well, now her husband is gone, and she's alone. She's like 67 years old, and she's being told that, you know, she's going to have to leave her house. They're just going to repossess. She doesn't have the kind of income that is suitable to do anything else, a Chapter 7, nothing. And she's still going to owe the money that is left on the house. Wow. Does she have any recourse?
Her best bet, and I'm not an attorney, but her best bet would be to do a deed in lieu of foreclosure, which is what they consider a friendly foreclosure. In other words, telling the bank, I can no longer pay. I'm willing to sign a document that I'll sign the house over to you and hope for the best.
But that sounds very ominous. Does that sound like she's going to be able to actually walk away without this heavy debt hanging, I mean, at the age of 67. I mean, the truth of the matter is she'll never pay it off. So
correct.
There isn't any, it just seems kind of, you know, not only mean, but futile.
Yeah. No,
you know, and the resale of the house will recoup the bank's losses, right?
Partially correct, yeah.
So
it's just,
wow.
Unfortunately, they are not, you know, the banks were up until 2012, along with everybody else, short selling, and they were okay with it. After 2012, they extended it the second week in January in 2013 for another year. There has been talk about another extension for 2014, but we're mid-March and nothing has gone through yet.
Mm-hmm.
And without that Debt Relief Act, anybody selling whatever that deficiency is, they're going to incur it as income. So they won't have to pay the full amount of the deficiency, but they will have to pay taxes to the IRS on that amount.
Yeah, see, that makes no sense. No, I know that the IRS does that, but it makes no sense to me. If the person can't pay their mortgage, which is anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500, you know, like on average, how are they going to pay a tax liability on a short sale of tens of thousands of dollars can be quite huge. Where are they going to get that money from? You know, in other words, the government's creating debts that's never going to be able to be paid. What, just to have the debt on the book? It makes no sense to even have a law enacted like that.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. That's
well,
been
it makes
toughest.
You guys' business a lot tougher too, doesn't it?
It honestly has. From 2007 mm-hmm. till the end of last year, I facilitated 278 short sales myself. This year,
wow.
Not one of them have gone through. I've heard of two from other partners in the business, coworkers, and each one of those two that have gone through have been hit with a short sale tax.
Wow.
They receive at closing, they receive a 1099 for the amount of deficiency that the bank figured between loss of payment, loss of interest, and then the deficiency from the loan and all the attorney costs incurred, and they're taking that as a 1099. It's the only way they can sell.
Wow. That just that makes very little sense to me.
I agree.
You know.
Well, we are, you know, on our show, guys, we've had a lot of controversial shows in regard to our leaders, our government, etc. Even though Shelley and I both have a tremendous amount of respect for the people that mm-hmm. are in leadership roles, I'm no spring chicken, and Shelley's not the youngest girl in the coop either. So we've seen a lot in our lifetimes, mm-hmm. And it gets very frustrating because you see all these people that are out there. I mean, in the medical arena, it can be god-awful scary. And then, of course, this, the American dream, to have a home, you know, to be able to pay your bills, to get a new car every so many years, and all those kind of things are kind of, getting further and further and further away from your average citizen. What do you guys suggest to, first of all, I'd like you to address, maybe you said something about a friendly foreclosure or something like that. Is there any suggestions you have for my 67-year-old friend? And then I'd like you to address what a young couple does today. I have a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old, my grandson and his girlfriend, and they're talking marriage, and they want a house so bad. They both work hard. They don't make a tremendous amount of money, but they work hard. And they have a little bit of a savings going on right now. And what do you say to a couple like that? Do you say, forget the dream, get a condo, and forget about it? I mean, you know, how do you lead these young people today?
Well, first they would have to get pre-qualified. So they would go to Lloyd, and in my respects, they would go to Lloyd and see what they would qualify for. Then we start looking in their price range. Down in South Florida, there are many single-family homes still available that are not short sales. A few of them are foreclosures. Others are what we call in the business arms-length transaction, stating that there's no third party involved. It's strictly seller to buyer with an mm-hmm. agent in the middle. And, mm-hmm. you know, we suggest that they go to those homes if they're, you know, in all honesty, looking to purchase. Mm-hmm. A 19 to 30, 35-year-old couple, you know, going out purchasing their first home, I'm sure Lloyd can tell you there's great programs available for them. Mm-hmm. with as little as 3.5% down and low interest rates. It's still a government-backed loan. That's where I would place them or suggest that they go.
Are there still programs for first-time buyers?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things that are out there, you know, as far as grants and other things like that, you know, city programs, Good Neighbor Next Door programs. I've actually sat down with my company, and we came up with different packages that we were coming in into different companies and offering them for their corporate benefits. We just recently sat down with the CTA. I really wanted to make this available to, you know, a lot of the teachers and all because, you know, they're very highly educated. They do a lot for, you know, our society. A lot of times they're dealing with issues that the parents should have really dealt with. And other things like that. So they're underpaid, in my opinion. I think they're underappreciated. But I've been doing a lot of loans as of recently for quite a few teachers. So the package that we put together, it's basically giving them up to $3,000 towards their closing costs, a $200 Home Depot card, a preferred interest rate. And if they happen to go with any of our builder partners, it can also be a cash incentive of up to $10,000. And that's a pretty significant incentive a lot of people have been taking advantage of. As far as the city programs that are out there, I know that you actually have to go through, you know, some educational pieces and graduate from those classes, and sometimes those processes could be a bit lengthy. We also do have a back-to-work program that I can touch on in just a few minutes regarding anybody who has had some adversity in their past, you know, such as a short sale or foreclosure, bankruptcy, or anything that really had a negative impact on their situation. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I mean, that's all really, really positive news, and I love that. And I love the fact that there are people like you working on good things to bring much better results for a lot of the people out there. Otherwise, the American dream is, you know, very slowly but surely sinking to the bottom of the ocean. So,
yeah.
If, you know, the other thing is, though, that scares me a little bit, and this is true in a lot of arenas, there's nobody out there, you know, like if you turn on the television, like I said, TV is our biggest media. Forget newspapers anymore. I think I might know five people, and I know a lot of people that read a newspaper. So television is our biggest source of information. And there's a lot of morning shows on that touch, I mean, the Today Show always, there's a realtor that comes on their show, and she shows all these really fancy homes all over the world and tells you whether it's a good buy and stuff like that. And she'll say at the end of her conversation, and you need to talk to this kind of a person and that kind of a person. It's too gray. And if you have no training in the world of finance, which most of us really don't, unless that's the, you know, that's what, you know, excited us when we were learning, then it's really foreign to us. So how are we going to let people know that they have to investigate instead of just saying, oh, okay, so, I mean, everybody knows who Fannie Mae is, and everybody knows who, you know, like go to your bank. My bank, BB&T, is always sending me, you are, you know, we can help you get a mortgage, we can help you do this. I mean, they're generic letters that go out to everybody and they change the names. But it's misleading. There's no true, no advocate for the people, except obviously you two. I mean, I'm sure there's more, but I mean, you're not right out there for people to find you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, those are things that are definitely challenges. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to be able to let people know that it's not as black and white as what it's made to look like to the rest of the world. There are variables. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them don't sound so hot right now, and maybe if it became more public, there would be some more people working on it and getting it to a better place. I mean, I remember. The years that you were talking about, I, working at the Institute, I was the GM, bought a parcel of property for $155,000. 6 months later, I sold it to a school district for $750,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was insane then. It was insane. People were, I mean, one of my landscapers borrowed money from work because this bank said, yes, they'd give him, a man who makes $12 an hour, give him a loan for a house for $300,000. And I went, oh, my God, you don't want to do that.
Yep.
I said, but Ms. Rini, they'll give it to me. And I'm like, I don't care. You're never going to be able to pay for that. So, you know, I mean, now he's struggling. He's got every one of his adult kids living with him, helping him pay this astronomical mortgage. So and that's what's going to happen to him. He's going to end up losing the house.
Mm-hmm.
It got really crazy, and now it's coming back, you know, within the means that should have stayed here. But now you have all this mess to clean up. How do you guys feel about what the media puts out there and what the rest of the world is given to understand, knowing what you know?
Well,
go ahead.
Well, me personally, I mean, I personally don't watch TV. I know that's kind of funny, but I try to be mindful of what I put into my head. But just to speak a little bit to that, I think it's extremely important to be educated on your options. Personal responsibility definitely goes a long way. You know, so people have to be aware of their financial situations. You know, make the right choices. You know, don't go too far into debts. You know, having established trade lines on your credit are definitely good things. I have been running into those issues lately, but the things that you definitely want to pay attention to are, you know, a lot of people coming into the industry think that you can actually just come in and write an offer for a property and, you know, then take care of your financing later. It's a little bit backwards. You definitely want to sit down with a mortgage professional and, you know, hammer out and really take a look at all of your options. Not everybody in the industry will work as an advocate for somebody who has some diversity and things like that. So you definitely want to try and find a guy like that that, you know, has some programs that can assist. You mentioned your grandson looking to purchase their first home. Those type of things are, I think, definitely the establishment of the American dream. You know, me and my wife were living in our first home, and that we had the opportunity that we were extremely grateful for. But definitely, the first step that you want to take in doing that is sit down with a, you know, a mortgage guy like myself, and if you wanted to, you can reach me directly on my cell phone, 561-758-5719, and then we can go through some of the options that are there. But you can do a loan actually for as little as 3.5% down. I can do, you know, a loan for someone with a credit score even down to the 600s. You know, the loan parameters are changing, you know, pretty often, but I stay apprised of a lot of it. So, you know, that's the first important step. Then the next one is to get with a realtor that knows what they're doing, knows what the market trends are doing, that can advise you the right way. You know, a few years ago, there were, you know, people were expecting the deals. Today, people were expecting the deals that they were coming a few years ago. So basically, where you can offer less than list price on a lot of different deals, and you're getting exceptional deals because of, you know, cancer cluster scares or, you know, the downturn in the market. There was so much inventory, but today the inventory is a lot less and there's a lot more buyers. So just your basic supply and demand, you know, you generally have to come in at list or above. So, and a knowledgeable realtor like James is able to, you know, help you acquire the home that you're really looking at. So.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that you don't watch a lot of TV because you're careful about what you put in your head. I second that, by the way. I don't really watch the news. I stay up on top of what's going on, you know, through other avenues. But there's so much misrepresentation, even in the news. You know, you'll hear a story, and then 6 months later, you'll hear that same story with added details that never came out in the original news report, and it can change the impact of the entire story and what the parties involved were really doing, you know. So I tend to address my news in other ways. But I've noticed that a lot of the commercials that come out are very incomplete. I'm not saying that they're blatantly going for misrepresentation, but it in effect is what happens. Because like John had made a comment when we had him on the show, you know, you have to understand that if somebody's putting a commercial on television, they're looking to make money. So if somebody is out telling you to do a reverse mortgage and you're going to own your home and, you know, and all these other things that sound so attractive, understand that somehow in the mix of them helping you, they're going to be making money. So it's not clean cut as the commercials make it sound. And, it, you know, a little bit of common sense has to kick in at that point.
Yeah, well, just to speak a little bit to the reverse mortgage, I'm not a huge advocate for it, but I have done quite a few, and those situations were, you know, very helpful to the people that that, you know, that took those mortgages. They were in situations where, you know, they had the equity in their home, but they didn't have the income. One couple, you know, the husband was, you know, he wasn't doing so well, and his life expectancy was really dropping off, and he wanted his wife to still be able to afford the home. For these instances, it was a lifesaver and a really viable option for these people. So, you know, just a disclaimer, it's not for everyone, but it's still a very helpful and viable option for others.
And I think it can be a viable option. As a matter of fact, I know of two different situations. One that, like you said, worked out very well for the individual, mm-hmm. the couple. But another individual, I don't know them personally. This was like a friend of a friend situation. They ended up ultimately losing their home because they didn't understand the mm-hmm. entire process. So it actually mm-hmm. went against them. And so that's why people really need to ask questions, need to understand the full scenario from the beginning to the end, and really mm-hmm. make a decision as to whether or not it's right for them. Because I agree, and in some cases it's a great solution, but in other cases it's mm-hmm. not. And you have to look at your own individual situation when you make a decision.
Yeah. The instance where someone lost their home, that may have, how long ago was that, Rini? Was that a few years ago, or?
That was Shelley, and it was, I think it was only like 3 or 4 years ago. It wasn't like in the last year or two. We're going back a couple of years.
Right. Yeah, I don't know the particular circumstance, but I do know that the reverse mortgage actually is, in the technical sense, they don't really exist anymore, but what's very common in the market right now is what's called a HECM mortgage, a HECM reverse mortgage, and that's a government-regulated mortgage. It's a home equity conversion mortgage. It's also known as a reverse mortgage, but it's, you know, the way that it used to be in the past was they were privately funded and other things like that, and a lot of times they may have had something abusive in there, such as a balloon or other kind of, abusive type of instrument in there. But with the FHA products and other things like that, it's designed for the protection of the borrower. So they actually have to go through a counseling session, and there's different mm-hmm. layers of protection so that, you know, everything is really explained out and it's understood. You even have, maybe your son or daughter, if they're of age, to join you so that you're fully understanding and things like that. So there are a lot of reforms that have taken place in that. And once again, that's called a HECM reverse mortgage.
HECM, HECKMA, okay. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about, first of all, can you explain what underwriters, what the deal is with that? What does that mean? What's that terminology mean?
The underwriter is basically the person that tests the integrity of a loan. That's my definition. So we have I'm a mortgage banker, so you have mortgage bankers or whatever. So we're the person that has the direct interaction with the customer. So someone looking to do the purchasing or whatever, so we're your advocate. So, you know, we figure out what would be the best fit for you. You know, we figure out, you know, exactly what your needs are, identify that and structure a package that would best suit you. And then we bring it in, we collect all of your documents. That's another thing that a lot of people are surprised about, that has been changed by the downturn in the market, having the whole mortgage industry reformed. It is extensive in the documentation. There's different things that are in place where we have to trace every bit of money. That's via the Patriot Act. We have to have, you know,
right.
your tax returns, your pay stubs, all these different things. And basically, what I try to do is paint the best picture that I can for the underwriter. So this way, when the underwriter gets all the documents, he has your application, he has your, you know, your tax returns for the last 2 years, your 1 month pay stub, et cetera, et cetera. He can basically see a picture of the entire proposal. And then what he does now is ask additional questions. So he tries to basically see where he can punch holes into the scenario to just to make sure that it holds water. I mean, the average loan nowadays is about, you know, in our area, maybe, you know, $200,000 to $300,000. So, you know, in that arena, you know, if you're going to put out $200,000 or $300,000, you want to make sure that, you know, there's a certain amount of integrity to the deal. So basically, that's what his job is to make sure that, you know, there's nothing funny going on, or, you know, he's asking those additional questions. So that normally requires a second or third round of documentation gathering for the loan originator, the mortgage banker, broker, and the client. So, and that generally, and, you know, once all the conditions have been met, then, you know, it goes into final, everything's been cleared, and then they give a clear to close. So then from that point, a package is sent out to the title company, and I attend all the closings myself. So I'm there. I hold your hand through the entire process and make the experience exceptional.
Wow.
I sit there and I kind of go through
them.
Hear. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I go through the documents with you. You know, I sit there as the title agent, does that. And, you know, I generally will give a housewarming gift at the end and just to send you off and into your new home correctly. So just to answer the question, the underwriter, his job is to really just test the integrity of the loan, just to make sure that the investment that the bank is going to do is sound.
Well,
and see,
I
one
think...
of the happened to me, and I don't know if this, I'm thinking it's unique, but in case it's not, I'll just put it out there, but we won't spend a lot of time on it. But what had happened to me is when I originally purchased this house, it was a government foreclosure, and I got it at a halfway decent price. But then what happened is certain things happened. I needed to refinance a couple years later, and when I went to refinance, I found out that the back of my house, around 750 square feet, and my two-car garage that wasn't finished, there was no garage doors on it, were never permitted.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't...
Ooh.
To roll that into the value of the mm-hmm. house when I refinanced. And I was very upset
yeah.
because it was not disclosed to me at closing. It might have been in the documents, but, you know, like when you're sitting there with the realtor and everybody else and they go page by page and they tell you what each page means and then you initial it or you sign it. I mean, you're there for, like, hours. But not one of the pages, if it said this, if it did bring it to my attention, it was not explained to me that that's what that particular page is. They gave another reason for all the different sheets I was signing. You know, and you sit there and you listen to the person, and nobody sits there and reads this telephone book novel while they're at a closing. So I was very upset when I found that out, and it's played a big role in the devaluation of my home, because when the hurricanes hit, I suffered damage to the roof, and I couldn't make an insurance claim because they weren't permitted, so they weren't even included on the insurance policy. And I didn't find that out years later. So that was part of what valued my property, and that's what I'm saying is I don't know if that's a unique situation, but that's kind of what happened to me.
No, I've had a few instances where it's happened to a few people as well. You're not the only one. Unfortunately, especially for the people who purchase what they call in the business an REO, real estate owned, which is a foreclosure, somehow, and I'm treading on water here, but somehow the banks have been either waived or it's been bypassed for them when there's been a permitting issue, and they've just been able to assign to the buyer or not even disclose to the buyer, stating that they have no knowledge of the property. So a lot of buyers kind of, you know, buyer beware if you're buying a foreclosure. It's, in all honesty, not the realtor's job. It's, in all honesty, not the mortgage broker's job. And in all honesty, not the title company or attorney's office to pull every single permit. The only way it gets flagged by the title company or the attorney's office, the person actually in the closing transaction, is if it has an open lien. I just had an instance last week where I wanted the contract, and, you know, yesterday the contract was canceled because of the fact that there was an open permit left on the house from 2004 for a roof put on and never closed out. For my clients, I'm not saying all realtors do this, but for my clients, I will pull every permit for the home and as much information as I can, because I feel that the service that they should be provided, you know, each buyer shouldn't have to turn into a private investigator to try and...
And that, now that you've said that, because this is a point, you know, this is an educational point for everybody listening, including myself. So if you're buying a home, you're a private individual, you don't have knowledge about this kind of thing, how would you go about finding out? In my particular case, the two-car garage, there wasn't even a permit pulled for it. The guy who lived here before me, the prior owner, I guess was handy with construction. He built it himself. He put down the foundation and built the whole thing himself. So according to a couple of realtors came out, they said it's going to have to be a knockdown because there's no way of telling if he used rebar in the foundation and stuff like that. So there's not even a way of permitting after the fact now. So what's going to happen is, how would I have known? Would I have looked at the survey, and if I didn't see the two-car garage on there, I realized that it wasn't part of the value of the house? You know, how would a layperson research their home to make sure that everything was accounted for appropriately?
The fastest way is look under your county's public record in the clerk of courts and search from that home address. Everything for most cities and most counties has to be permitted. So from the original structure, you mentioned getting a survey. Some counties will only allow an actual owner to obtain a survey to the property. They won't allow interested party purchasing to have a copy of it. So, you know, you would know after the fact if that was the case. But if you pull up and look at the permit, let's say the house was constructed in 1998. And there was work done in 2001 and 2004. If there's an open permit and a closed permit for 2001, whatever they did within that time, they were fine. If in 2004 there was an open permit but never closed out, that's when I would say buyer beware.
What if there was never a – like in my particular case, so there really wasn't a way of me knowing ahead of time then, because this guy did all this work. He enclosed a patio on the back of his house and built this two-car garage himself, never pulled permits for either one. They're so far in the back of the property, I guess nobody even saw him working. I have a big piece of property. And they were just, so there were no permits pulled, so I would have had no way of knowing that this wasn't permitted. So there's no other way of me looking at what the house is legally described as to see that it wouldn't have included a garage or something? I mean, there's nothing on record like that where I could have seen that it wasn't part of the legal description of the home?
Yes, there is. On the property appraiser's website, there is a sketch of the original layout of the home or whatever was added.
Okay.
You go onto your county property appraiser's website.
Our garage or the
home
or
address.
I got you.
Correct.
Okay.
It should show up under there. Now, if it shows that, you know, again, if there was an open permit after the home was built, then you just want to cross-reference through public records for, again, your county, if there was an open and a closed permit. Once you go in a contract, you know, most contracts, 99% of them are as is with right to inspect. So you do have whatever the buyer and the seller agree upon, whether it's a 7-day, 10-day, or 15-day buyer inspection period. Within that inspection period is when you can do your full due diligence for the property.
Okay. Oh, it's great information. Thank you.
Well, and I think this is a part of what I'm talking about. Like how many people, really pretty educated people, are going to know that they can do that? And of course, the building and zoning department, in my tenure at the Institute, I had lots of conversations with them, and it does get pretty convoluted over there because you have different departments there, just like you do in everything else that we do today. And one person says, yes, you can do this, and the next apartment you go to is your follow-through that you find out, oh, no, no, you can't do that. So
right.
it is pretty difficult for your run-of-the-mill layperson who has another job, a different responsibility, different training, et cetera, to really understand what it is they're supposed to be doing. When you guys are contracting to help someone find a home or help someone sell a home, is there written material that you give to people today that kind of like is a walkthrough, or doesn't anything like that exist?
It is really great that you said that,
yeah.
Because me and James here, we're actually putting together a series of videos that are going to be accessible on YouTube. So it'll kind of be a tutorial of, you know, we're going to make it, you know, kind of entertaining, so it's not going to be boring to look at, but, you know, we'll throw some few jokes in there or whatever, but, you know, it'll really kind of lay out, you know, your process, things to expect in the home buying process and other things like that, you know, that will really kind of clarify a lot of different things and maybe some misconceptions or problems that we're seeing in our day-to-day practice. So.
Well, I think that's awesome, and that's
I do too.
But endeavor, it isn't, you know, it isn't fair to say to somebody, I learned this as a manager. It isn't fair to say to somebody, you're not doing the things you're supposed to do unless you have actually taken the time to make sure that they understand what they're supposed to do. And in today's world, things have moved so quickly and in so many different directions. And, of course, the specialization, like I mentioned early on. I mean, I'm encompassed right now in the medical arena because of my husband, my great-grandson, all this stuff that's going on in my life. And it's like you start feeling like a real dummy, I'll tell you. You start feeling like a real dummy. You start feeling like, you know, oh, my God, you know, how do other people do this? And real estate has always been, unless you get some training, unless you understand the jargon, it's really over most of our heads. And it's not to say that it's impossible to understand, but unless you're immersed in it, change for you guys every day.
Yep.
So
a
person who thinks that they're up on it, turns around and, oh, well, that's not the way we do it anymore, you know, or this isn't the way we do it anymore. So it is, and it is difficult to keep up with. Now, I think how are you guys going to let people know that they can get on YouTube and see this stuff? Is this after they, you know, to see you, or are you going to put something out there that says, you know, enlighten all of you? It'll make your lives a lot easier if we're more enlightened.
We're hoping to push it through social media, and try and even set up a website so it'll make it easy for people searching on the internet.
Well, I would love, you can utilize Renee's Heart to Heart, please, to talk about that, because the whole idea of starting this show was to help people. I don't make any money. It's not about money. It's about making sure people know that they're not the only one that, you know, doesn't get it or can't quite grasp what's going on. And the availability of information should be there for everybody. I mean, you know, that goes without saying. If you're going to change laws and things like that, I mean, how many people do you know, how many business people do you know that understand all the laws unless they have reason to tap into it and find out about it, right?
Right.
Yep. Laws change.
Yep. Right.
Okay. When I was immersed in the judicial system because of the other grandson, I was like, oh, my God, how can this happen? You know, judges recusing themselves, and the reason is because some juror said hello to him on the elevator, and I'm like, what? So it's pretty. You know, our world is a real mishmash. So the whole idea of reading heart to heart is to let people know that they're not standing by themselves and that there are answers, And just because looking the first couple times you can't find them doesn't mean that they don't exist. So you guys are always welcome to let us know when those videos are done. We'll put it out there for you as well. We'll give out your website. I think that's an awesome, awesome idea. And I think that it will serve everybody involved. It will serve you. It will serve the people that are coming to you for help. I think it's a great idea. I'm kind of, does that mean it's time to get up?
Yeah, we really appreciate that a lot, yeah. But,
you know, it's what it's really about. And again, the American dream is going to be successful and stay within reach of every American, then these are the kind of steps that have to happen. They just do.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, a lot of people will just say, I'm not getting in the middle of that. I'm just going to, you know, go buy my little trailer and rent it and don't care what happens to the land. Don't care whether the landscaping is beautiful. Don't care about this. Don't care about that. That's what we incite when we don't give enough information. We give people the who gives a crap attitude. Right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts showing. It shows in when you're out at Walmart. It shows when you're walking down your own street at home. It shows everywhere. We don't want that. We want our world to be beautiful and also reachable. So I love doing the videos, and I think they will be a real asset to everyone. We've only got a few minutes left, and I wanna say to you, let me kind of assess what you've said to us so far. So there's really no fix that you can think of for my elderly friend. She's in trouble no matter how she cuts her pie, right? The one who just died.
Yeah, for me, I mean, as far as on the financing side, I don't know until I have, you know, a conversation and maybe, you know, get a full picture of what she's looking at, because then I can probably take a look and see, you know, where maybe the points where we can access some assistance would be located. But until I have, you know, a full picture, I mean, I can't really say that there's no hope or there is hope.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Is it speaking, or is that you, Lloyd?
Yeah, that's Lloyd, yep.
Okay, because you guys, just like Shelley and I must sound a lot alike to you guys, you sound a lot alike to us. So, Lloyd, I'm going to have this lady mention this to you the other day, but I thought I'd take the opportunity to feel it out a little bit on the show today. So I will have her call you in, and she's very sweet, and she really needs some help. I would hate to think that she had to walk away with owing a whole bunch of money looming over her at the age of 16, you know, and no spouse now. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
So we'll have her call you, and we will we'll wait for you guys to let us know when these videos are going to be available. And as I said, I will mention it all the time on the air. And people know that those kind of things are going to be out there for them to see. Now, are you guys going to just do this on your own, or is there a bigger team that's working with you? Or
Go ahead, James.
No, I was going to say, as of right now, we're going to start it off and see how well it goes. And we both have the backup for expansion.
You both have the what? Will you say that again for me?
The backup for expansion. I know Lloyd and his company, they can provide whatever help he may need along, whether it be assistance or other team members. The same with my company, Atlantic Shores Realty.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Shell, do you have any more questions for the guys?
No, not at this point. I mean, I loved the information that they gave him. It was very specific. I think it's going to be very, very helpful to a lot of people. But for right now, I'm good. And as things progress on my short sale versus versus regular sale, then I probably will have some other things to present that might fit other people's situations.
Well, and I think one of the things that I like about both of your attitudes, if I may say this, is the fact that you're not treating things like they're black and white, and you both seem to have the understanding that every situation is different, and unless you examine it, you don't know whether there's a way to fix it. One of my pet peeves, even as a manager, when I hear one of our team members say, oh, I don't know if you can do that or not, or that's not my job because I don't know anything about that. I hate that. Hate that. And I think that if you're sitting in a seat, or maybe it is not your expertise, but you know that it's in your realm, you should be able to say to somebody, you know what? Nobody's ever asked me that question before. Let me research that and get back to you. That's the appropriate answer, and that's who seem to function, and I love it. Love it completely. Right, Shell?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because answers to questions, there. If you visualize the world, you know, like in your imagination and think of it, there must be trillions of unanswered questions out there floating around in our atmosphere. And very sadly, sometimes one unanswered question ruins somebody's life or changes their life to a place that, you know, they can never get it back to some kind of normalcy. So I think it's important that I think it's important that we research. I think it's important that we don't say to somebody, oh, no, you can't do that.
Well, you know, you're talking about one wrong answer can really cause upheaval in somebody's life. My original issues with my house started several years ago, about 5-6 years ago. I had gotten a bill from the insurance policy on my house, and it was double the amount, almost exactly double the amount. So I called the mortgage company. And they said, no, you know, verify this with your insurance. I think it was Citizens at the time. But that they're just showing, you know, like the 2 years, this year and next year. I was like, well, it kind of made sense to me. So I called them. The person who answered the phone at the insurance company said the same thing. So I ignored it. I was like, okay, well, I don't know why they're showing 2 years. And, you know, and I didn't really understand everything I was reading. It's just the amount caught my attention. I had the names of the individuals I spoke to. They both said, no, don't worry about it. They're just showing prior year plus the next year. But what it was is it wasn't prior year. It was the increase. They were showing the prior year plus the increase for the new year. It wasn't a two-year estimate. A year later, after I had already questioned this with both the mortgage company and the insurance company, so I thought I did my due diligence, I get hit with a mortgage increase to now collect. It was something like another $600 a month, something like that, to make up for the short collection of the insurance, because it was almost $4,000 a year. And it was like $350 or something. Well, whatever. It was about $4,000 a year hike on the insurance. And that's the first time I couldn't make my mortgage payment because they wouldn't accept a mortgage payment that didn't have this increase in it. And so I called everybody and I said, I told that wasn't an increase. Well, we made a mistake. The bottom line is you owe us this. So instead of at the time being able to negotiate for a reduced policy, I incurred this cost for over a year, and it was the first time I defaulted on my mortgage because I couldn't make the original payments. That's the first time I had to refinance to cover this increase, and then things kind of escalated from there.
Well, and I think probably – those kind of scenarios happen to people every day, and being able to have a place to go to get answers is the most important thing. I want to thank everybody. We've only got 15 seconds left. I want to send everybody out there with some real good feelings today. The sun is shining. Florida is beautiful today. Somebody just sent me a picture of a snow-laden upstate New York again, you poor people. So,
oh, man.
Great. We love you, and we'll be back tomorrow morning with a recap. Thank you, guys. You were awesome. Awesome, awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Bye, nice meeting you. Take care, Reen.
Thank you. Likewise. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.